My therapist often jokes that I've kind of created my own therapy. So she feels
That
like,
is.
yeah, it is.
Okay, and welcome back to Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan. And today I am joined by Ems Finch, who's going to be talking to us about a really interesting project which she has developed. Welcome, Emily.
Hi, Alice.
Now, we've just got notes here just to say that a really important part of this story, we mention miscarriage. So for any of you who this is affected, we just wanted to give you a heads up that we will be talking about this. But I really encourage you to listen along and hear it through, because this, the kind of recovery from that, is an important part of this story. Is that a fair way of putting it at this stage?
That's perfect, Alice. Yeah. I won't go into any details about it, but I just really want to reach out to other people who may have experienced and share what's happened to me and how I'm recovering, and I'm using my painting as a core part of that.
In a very, very different way. That's what's so interesting, I think, is that the visuals and how this kind of work has moved forward is really interesting. So we're going to go into this in more detail, and about how you have taken this really personal starting point for a project, and it is now becoming something that is much bigger than you. You're working with some really interesting organizations. You've gone through a lot of different ways to kind of bring this together, and the idea is that it ends up being a really interesting basically, it's a brilliant story of how one nugget of an idea from something that was a very difficult start has grown into something much more extensive. So I'm really looking forward to hearing a full update on this. And I hope that this is going to be a really, really inspiring conversation for anybody who's ever just thought, well, I wonder what would happen if I just took this idea for something that's really important to me and followed it through, and to see what kind of change it would lead to. Okay, so before we get into that, tell us a little bit. We usually have a kind of, brief update. So what have you actually been working on this week?
Well, I've had a really fun week this week. I've been painting more trees. We'll hear all about that in a bit. But I've got well over 120 trees in the studio now.
Wow.
I've been working on some 30 by 100 centimetre trees. So it's a really nice format.
Thin.
And I do my trees every day. It's part of life now for me. I've been packing up some prints because people have been very kindly buying some of my tree prints. And I've been preparing for an open studio. I'm doing art in the garden down the road with a local artist, and I've also been delivering landscapes because I'm selling some landscapes from the gym. So it's kind of all go, as well as being a mum. So it's been a fun week.
Okay, so let's just have a little bit more background to this. So you're based in South London, and you have got how old's your daughter now?
She's 3 and a half. She'll be 4 in October, so over 3 and a half. Yeah.
Okay.
Very sassy little girl.
Yes, it's somewhat a fun age, and also beautifully challenging, I think. I mean, it's you really start to see their personalities come out, but sometimes you can be very glad for bedtime, right?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, bedtime's my painting time, so yeah.
So let's just take a little bit of a step back. What did you do before painting? Tell us a little bit more about, your life a bit to that point, because I think it does help put things into context.
So I grew up in a farm in Wiltshire. I've always been so drawn to nature. And it's no wonder I've sort of come full circle in my journey back to nature. But in the meantime, I was born with a hip condition, which meant that I had dislocated hips at birth, and it wasn't diagnosed. So I had many operations as a child, which culminated in a total hip replacement when I was 18 years old. And I woke up from that operation sort of immediately disabled and left in a wheelchair. I had no feel, I had nerve damage below my waist. And as an 18-year-old, I was not really very well equipped to deal with it, but I sort of chose the stoic route out. So I just sort of got on with it, accepted the wheelchair, went into rehab physio for 9 months, full-time physio. Didn't have any, as far as I can remember, I didn't have any therapy or anything to do with my mind at that point. I was focused purely on getting my walking back, which I'm extremely fortunate to have done. And I now just use a walking stick with my mobility. But I've had a number of operations since then on my pelvis, and I've had my ankle rebuilt because of arthritis. So my life hasn't been sort of a steady journey. When I became disabled aged 18, I was at that point of my life, I was really looking forward to going to art college. I'd been doing a lot of really interesting stuff at school. At A level, I actually did an installation for my final piece at A level, which involved light, darkness, and sculpture, and it was quite eerie. It was, yeah, it was very, very conceptual, and I was heading in that direction. But when I when I suddenly became disabled, it was sort of a really tricky decision. It was like, you're going to be disabled. Being an artist is going to be a tricky thing to go into, perhaps financially, but being a disabled one possibly could be a bit of a challenge. So I was fortunate to have a place at Durham University, and so I headed off in that direction and almost shut painting and art out of my life for quite a long time. Went to university, then I landed a job at Deloitte in the city. So I was an IT consultant, believe it or not. Now a complete technophobe. But I did that for nearly 6 years. And there was always something missing from life in the city. It was dull and it was not creative. And all my the ideas that I had while I was at school doing these installations, I'd have ideas popping all the time. It just went. It wasn't there anymore. Didn't see colour, didn't appreciate, like, I would commute into work and everyone was just looking down at their phones, and I just would look up and think, God, there must be more to this. So I
did you see a way out of it at that point?
No, I didn't. And it's a tricky thing, because I think once you get into that kind of a job, the money really does bring you in, and you get paid well. And that each point where you think, oh, I really can't do this any longer, they give you a bit more and a bit more. And so it becomes this vicious circle of just chasing something that's not making you happy. Anyway, I decided to quit it, because I did get to a point where I couldn't do it anymore. And I found a role in television. So I worked with David Attenborough for, well, not with David, I worked for a production company who made productions with David Attenborough. For 3.5-4 years, and that was fascinating work, and he's just a phenomenal man. And then I found a job in drama, and worked on some really incredible dramas for a production company who works very closely, or is part owned by BBC Worldwide. And so I started to find bits of creativity in the drudgery of the 9-to-5.
That's very brave to do that, to as you say, to pull back from that kind of career, you know, addictive sort of career life thing. I wonder if finding the bravery to do that also came from, I mean, there must have been a certain resilience that, no, despite not having had, as you say, that mental health support with whatever, with what you faced at 18, do you think it must have given you a sense of, right, I mean, you said, let's just get on with it. Do you think you reached that point sooner than most people would do with a job like that? Do you think it helped, or was that not a conscious part of it?
It's a very good question. I think that when I became disabled, I totally didn't accept it at all. And I actually went the other way in that I would shoulder the kind of the uncomfortableness when I met new people about it. So I'd be like, oh, it doesn't stop me from doing anything. It's absolutely fine. It's not a problem. And I ended up working so hard to try and compensate for a physical disability. I just worked and worked and worked, and I could never put work down. I was so bad at having any time for myself. I just sort of worked myself into exhaustion. And I knew that that wasn't sustainable. But I'm a bit of a perfectionist. So I went and went and went until my kind of said, no, sorry, you have to take a bit of a break. And the television work was no less hours. It was still very, very long hours. And it was quite challenging at times. I was working for the CEO of the production company. I was sort of running his office. And that involved pretty much everything to do with the business. And I've sort of started to get more focused into the marketing and PR, because that was the creative stuff. That was the designing of the posters. That was doing a bit of the adverts, doing a bit of the PR work with David. So I was sort of carving my way out of it, but all the time just not feeling fulfilled at all. It was a tough place to be. And then I had my daughter in 2017. And that was the change that I needed, I guess. And I was 8 months pregnant when I went on an oil painting 1 day course with a friend of mine. And I could barely sit at the table because my bump was so huge. But there was the first time I got oil paints out. And I just had a ball, and I got oil paint all over my clothes. Like, the bump was in the way. I had such fun. And it was just like the spark lit up inside me. And I was like, oh, this is fun. This is brilliant. I want more of this. And so as soon as Martha was old enough to sort of be put in a bouncer, I would be, when she was napping or in the evenings, I would get out my little set of 10 paints and just start posing problems for myself with the oil paints and how to overcome them. Because I think that's very much the way I work. I sort of try and figure stuff out by trial and error. I at the kitchen table, I got the oil paints out. I just started painting. And
but at that stage, it was very much, was that something for you to do? You weren't seeing this as anything big that was going to be a new career? Was it just something to keep your hand in as a part of being you in that role of a new mum?
Yeah, it was definitely that. It was definitely, clawing some of me back in the midst of, the feeding and the nappy changing and all of that. I was going back to work at that point. I was on maternity leave, and it was very much a temporary thing. But
and then in the time I've known you, you have grown. I mean, you have grown this. So you, at some point, you've decided you've committed to this. You've had open studio shows and some joint exhibitions. Fairly recently, then, of course, all interrupted by COVID a little bit. And then, so tell us about what else happened recently that has kind of shifted direction.
So, I'd say that the shift from I'm just sort of doing this for me to making it into a career was actually, I'd say, properly the start of the lockdown. Right. I started painting landscapes, and I had a series in my mind, which I'd always wanted to do, probably for about 14 years, of painting the green spaces in London. And because everyone was going out into those green spaces, it felt really relevant. I spent all of the first and second lockdown painting landscapes in London. I'm still selling them. And I ended up opening a commission book, and I had a very steady stream of commissions I did throughout 2020, which were predominantly with the artist support pledge. So
but you were good even at the beginning of that. I remember you were very good about opening up, and as you say, even though you were a fairly new artist at that stage, you recognized quickly, maybe because of your background in PR, how important it was going to be to let other people know about this, welcome other people in. So you were quite good at talking about it within your local area, weren't you? So you got onto, was it local Facebook groups or those sort of next door groups? Yeah. That's where these things started to come from, in terms of, because that's what we want, you know, if you're working in a local space in London, and then there's, you know, it's only going to be other people who go there and love it and use it for their dog walk. It's not going to be, have the same kind of resonance with somebody who lives in, you know, New York.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And I joined the local arts festival, the open houses, whilst my house was still a building site, I hasten to add. Yeah. Like, there were two rooms done in the house and it was an open studio. My husband's a builder, so I'll always be living in building sites, I think. Open houses. I was very proactive on putting my landscapes on the Nextdoor app, and got several commissions through that.
Yep.
And several sales of pieces I'd already done. And right now, actually, I've got 30, well, I did have 30, I've sold 8 of them already, 30 paintings hanging in my local gym, because they painted it over lockdown, and it was all bare walls down the main corridor of the club. And they just said, found me on Instagram, didn't know I was a member, and found me on Instagram and said, oh, do you want to put your paintings up? And I said, oh, that'd be brilliant, thank you.
Yeah.
And it's just transformed the space. And it's amazing how every week I get a new little sale, which is just such a huge boost for my confidence. It's a great way of meeting loads of local people.
Yeah.
And just having my postcards as well on the reception. And I did a sort of little bio about myself in a fun way to put. So it's almost like a mini exhibition in the gym.
Perfect.
And it's wonderful.
Before we move on, I just want to talk a little, take a moment to just stop and highlight that, because I think for lots of people, we imagine that it's us working, and then the ultimate aim goal is some huge, great, big, fancy gallery somewhere. And in my experience, these kind of things that you're talking about are so valuable. You know, they build all those local connections, which carry on being important, you know, forever. They give you the opportunity to show your work, to learn from your work together. So I think it's fantastic that you're doing that. How are people actually buying? Because this is a mistake sometimes that I see people doing. They think that just having the work there, people will go and do the work. So you have got postcards on, you've got a really welcoming introduction. This is me, this is how you can get in touch. How are people doing it?
Yeah. So I actually designed quite a fun infographic poster, and I've put it in three places along the corridor. So wherever you go, when you might walk into the corridor and then see paintings and not realize that you passed the infographic. So I'm reminding people all the time. I've briefed the gym staff very clearly with an email briefing and face-to-face briefing on, you know, what it's all about, and got really friendly with the amazing reception staff, and they are probably really helping with the sale process, because they're just sort of talking about it in general with people who are. And I've got labels which clearly state at the bottom, you know, providing my email address and my phone number. And most of the time people just call me up. They're just passing in the corridor. They call me up and I say, okay, I can be there in 5 minutes. Or would you be happy with me to put a red dot on it and collect it in a week or so? Because I'm finding the red dots also are brilliant ways of selling other work because people are seeing them go. It's a bit of a learning. I'm learning.
But it's amazing. I think it's interesting, isn't it? But it's amazing how much you sort of have to spell it out at every single stage. I mean, I remember, you know, when I had work in a local coffee shop, and one of the things that I put on my label was, you know, I live literally 5 minutes away, you know, you can call me, I can reserve it, we can do a trial run in your house. You've just got to really show people the different ways that they can touch you, because people are hesitant. Like, people, they don't necessarily want to ring somebody up out of the blue. So if you're thinking of doing this, anybody, just put yourself in the shoes of the people viewing it and think, what would you like to see? How would you like to get in touch with this anonymous artist? The first thing is, don't make yourself anonymous. and just make it easy for people to contact you and get in touch. It's so valuable. I really think that this stage of showing work can be really fun. You can do things out of the box. You can make things really personal. You can let your personality show. And it's just, I think it's a really nice stage of showing work. So that's really good that that's going well.
Thanks.
So tell us a little bit more then about this current work you're doing and what started that.
Yes. So amidst lockdowns, my husband and I decided that it would be wonderful to try for another baby. We obviously have our 3.5-year-old, and it all happened a little quicker than we possibly anticipated. So in April 2020 I was pregnant, and really excited. We massively jumped the gun with telling people, perhaps, and telling my daughter and all of that good stuff. And at between 12 and 13 weeks, I sadly miscarried. And it was the most traumatic event of my life, largely down to the hospital and how they dealt with it. And also there was a big factor that my husband wasn't there because of COVID. So I went through quite a nasty 24 hours in hospital, which ended in an emergency operation. And out of the back of that, I had not a single word of support for my mental health from the hospital. So it was like, you've come through the general anaesthetic and the operation. Once you've had something to eat and gone to the loo, you can go home. That was it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't sleep for about 3 or 4 days. And I was like, because I was getting these flashbacks and I couldn't get past the flash. My brain, I know now that my brain just couldn't process what had happened. And so it was just coming back in flashbacks very regularly. And I called the hospital back and they gave me the numbers of some local charities, but I unfortunately got answer phone messages. So I went for myself. I had to Google help. I called a number of amazing charities, including the Miscarriage Association and Tommy's. And over the weeks that passed, I basically had flashbacks where every time I looked up, I would get the flashback. So I learned not to look up. So I was very much looking down the whole time. And even looking to eye level was a challenge for me. And looking anywhere above eye level, I couldn't do. So it was quite debilitating, and I was put on a waiting list for CBT.
CBT is cognitive behavioural therapy.
Behavioural therapy,
So it's a kind of talking therapy that talks you through different stages and talking your way out of it a bit. It can be quite powerful,
It was when I finally got it, was on a waiting list for quite a while. It taught me incredible ways of using grounding techniques. So when your brain, I've learned quite a lot about brains and I won't bore you with it, but when you have this level of trauma, it sits in the front of your brain and it just bounces around and your brain can't process it. So the flashbacks are sort of telling you really need to sort this out. So I had some very specific trauma-based CBT, and that has definitely helped with the processing. The flashbacks are much less frequent now. But the biggest thing I learned was grounding techniques. So having things that remind you that you are in the present around you. I've got these amazing bracelets that I wear all the time. So if I ever had, I know I have the confidence that I have these bracelets on me. And if I ever have a flashback, I just have to touch them and I know that I'm in the present. I'm okay. I know what I know now. And that technique was invaluable for me. But anyway, what happened? So then I fell pregnant again over Christmas, and sadly had a second miscarriage in February this year, 2021. And despite going through all of this therapy and feeling like I was in a much stronger place, the fact that it happened and again ended in an operation at about 12 weeks really floored me. And I was depressed. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't function. I wasn't being a very good mum to my daughter. And we were in the middle of lockdown. So
again,
the days were super long, really hard. I cried a lot of the time. Really hard on my daughter as well, because the fun-loving mum that she was used to just was gone. I'm very, very lucky to live opposite a common. And I've got one tree just directly out of my window, which I just look at for hours. I just love it. And one day I just knew I had to be outside with the trees. And I went into the woods, and at eye level, someone had put a pebble in a tree, and on it they painted the words, "Be happy." And something inside me that day just happened. The only way I can put a word to it was almost like I went into a bit of a trance. I lay down under that tree. I breathed heavily, very, very deeply, for the first time in what felt a long time. And I saw colour again. And the first colour I saw was the blue of the sky. And it just seared like I still find it really hard to put words to it, and I've spoken about it a lot.
Yeah.
But the colours just seemed to penetrate like I'd not seen in an awfully long time. And I just was noticing things. I was noticing the birds flying, and I was noticing the insects, and I was hearing the sounds all around me and crunching under my ear where there was an ant. Just like really, like I was just there in the present. And I got up from that. I don't even know how long I was there, but it must have been quite a bit of time. And I stood up, and the first thing I thought was, oh my goodness, what the hell am I going to tell my husband? What just happened? How am I going to explain what just happened? What's the time? Oh my God, what do I need to go and get? And suddenly I was back into, I need to do this, I need to do that.
Yeah.
So I stopped myself from doing that. Came back to the studio, and I just got the paints out. And instead of getting the yellow ochre out to put down a ground for an oil paint, I got my fluorescent pink. And I put this pink on with so much joy. I just covered this canvas. And then I started painting the trunk of a tree. And it was the first painting I did was actually three trees all entwined, which was what I'd seen laying underneath them. And I just felt a release. And I was just so absorbed in it. And when I finished the painting, I just sat and looked at it and I thought, wow, that's what I've needed to do. That's the thing that's been missing in this whole mental health cloud has been, I needed to release it. And that was just the start. And I've really developed that process now, and the process is the thing that keeps me going.
I've heard you tell this story before, and what I find really interesting about that is there's a sort of switch that clicks, and I don't know, because I don't know enough about these things, but I wonder how much of it has to happen before the switch clicks, and that's a necessary part of it. And trying to bring this kind of back to painting and the way we work and how our emotions get tied into our work. I've seen this so often in my own life and in other people, how often we have to go through these traumatic, difficult, uncomfortable phases to get to a moment where we think either joyously, that's fantastic, or a kind of rock bottom place where you think, fuck it, what's the worst can happen, you know, from now here onwards, you know, on we go. And it's just really interesting. I just wonder how much of it is in the fact that you took that feeling and made it into something that was very physical quite quickly.
So the process, I've actually been refining the process a lot. So from that first one, I kind of was chasing the high of the feeling that I got after the first painting.
I love that thought. It's very probably much not something that perhaps we should encourage in all areas of life, but chasing that, you know,
No, but it was.
It's what we do, though. That's the thing, isn't it? You know, life is this muddly, messy, awful, exciting, challenging mix of stuff, and we need those high moments. And I think that's very often, you know, art is so powerful because it reflects all parts of it. But that feeling of chasing the high in your work, that's a nice little thing. I'm underlining that twice.
Oh, nice. I've not had an underline before.
So you still like get that it, now. So Anna. So you start, you had that one painting. I've got the did you realize immediately when you finished that one painting is not enough? I've got to go back to this.
Yeah. I mean, in actual fact, I just sat there all night and I think I painted three.
Right. Okay.
And four different sizes. And then I soon realized that I didn't have enough canvases for what I needed to do.
Yeah.
And so I put in a massive order for canvases and dye bond and paper. And I just decided that I needed to cover every surface I had with paint. With pink paint, and I just I have spent a long time just catching up from the time that I've missed. I feel like I sort of put a pause on my creative brain back when I was 18, and something switched on again. And suddenly I have these ideas back. And I now have a little black book. I know how you like your little sketchbooks and black books, Alice. So I have a little black book, thanks to your influence, of ideas. And some of them are totally potty. But some of them are like, well, you could go into any big art gallery today and see something like that. And it would be relevant. And all of it is fairly conceptual. And all of it is based back to nature. Right. And the biggest thing that's come out of all of this is my learning about nature, about trees, and about how just being in nature is so important for everyone. I've met the incredible lady called Faith Douglas, and she her handle on Instagram is Forest Bathing UK. She's written a book called The Nature Remedy. And she is just a legend. She works very closely with Help the Heroes and takes war veterans with very severe PTSD out into nature and other people, everyone, and does forest bathing walks. So what do I mean by forest bathing? It's nature has been used as sort of an antidote to stress for many, 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 many years, thousands of years. In the 1980s, there was a lot of research done in Japan about how nature could really help with your stress levels. And indeed, they prescribe it out there. They prescribe the forest bathing.
Yeah.
Anything from 15 minutes to 2 hours, just laying, meditating and being in nature. And there is real science behind it. So in Facebook, I've been learning how the trees emit a hormone. That hormone is to protect them from pests and diseases. But once we inhale it, it has a direct impact on our nervous system. And it helps us to raise our levels of serotonin. So quite literally, trees make you happy. And it's, you know, it's not just me saying that they have made me happy. They do. It's scientifically backed. And even if you can't get outside and see nature, just looking at a documentary or looking at a book of pictures of trees or nature can also have the same effect. And it's fascinating. And in this sort of, you know, coming out of COVID world, hopefully fingers crossed, all the lockdowns we've been enduring and being in our houses and having our lives restricted in such a huge way, I think the residual mental health issues that are going to come out of that, we haven't even begun to understand or see. And people, and I'd say people from my generation and possibly younger generations are a lot more savvy to understanding how they need to look after their mental health. But I think it's really important to recognise that as we come out of these lockdowns, these COVID lockdowns, that we haven't even begun to see the impact on our general mental health.
Yeah, collectively. Collectively and individually, I think, yeah.
Yeah. So we've kind of been isolated, and one of the main sort of symptoms of depression is when you pull in and you isolate yourselves. So it's no wonder that we're all in a very tricky place, and the levels of anxiety of people going back into public places are quite huge.
And ironically, the impact on your immune system to function efficiently is tremendous in that.
Exactly.
This has obviously been transformational for you.
Yes.
What do you hope to encourage other people to do as a result of this? So is this for you about, and you're probably going to say all of these things, sharing your story in terms of encouraging openness about miscarriage, one thing, encouraging other people to find restoration in nature and everything that you're learning about that. I know that the prints that you're doing at the moment are raising funds for some of the charities that have helped you. So Tommy's Beda UK, I didn't know about this one.
Beda UK, yeah. It's an amazing charity set up by Razak, who lost his brother to suicide in 2017.
Right.
And his brother was called Beda. And they are spreading the word about mental health and suicide prevention in a fascinating and wonderful way. They are teaming up with brilliant people and creating events that start the conversations about mental health. So they do football games. Mm-hmm. They released a cookbook during lockdown with some amazing celebrity chefs. They recently did a walk with a supermodel, Alexina Graham, in a forest, like a wild walk and an amazing meal. They're trying to almost demystify mental health in coming from a perspective of, if you recognize that you are feeling low, that there are things that you can pick up, there are hobbies, there are things that you can start to include yourself in, to create your community around you, to help you sort of lift you up a little bit.
Yeah.
And if you aren't lucky enough to get the support, you know, the talking therapy support and other things. So I just think they're a really important, and they're not professing to provide help for mental health help. They're signposting people to other charities, but yeah, it's a very important one for me.
Yeah, and I think it's always a difficult thing to discuss, because I mean, I know that I've had, you know, conversations with my dad when I was having depression, and he just didn't understand it. And I think actually, unless you're there and unless you've been in a situation with something like this, there's no reason why you should understand it or why you could understand it possibly. And you know, even for myself, I think it surprised me, it shocked me that I was suddenly in this situation. But I know that since I've been open about it and spoken to people about it, probably at the time more than now, it encouraged other people to go, actually, I think I need to go and see somebody and get help about that. And the more we do that, the more it just becomes, I don't think we should lead people into expecting it, but I think it's really important that people know that there are ways out. And what's so interesting, and about, you know, why, if you like, we opened with a warning about this, is that the paintings that you're doing are such the opposite of insulation and isolation and depressive. They're such joyous paintings. I can only imagine what it feels like to be in that room. They must be really outgrowing you. So why prints now, and what's your idea and dream for the paintings?
So I think there's a sort of a short and medium and long term goal for me. And short term, I want to give back to some of the charities that have helped me. And so I'm selling, I've chosen 5 of my trees so far to create prints of. And I have been, back to your point about what you want out of it, I've been contacted by quite literally hundreds of people who've been through miscarriage, mm-hmm. not just women, men as well.
Yeah.
And not just of my generation. I've had people contact me who had miscarriages 30, 40, even 50 years ago, who still carry it with them yeah. and have never, ever felt able to talk to people about yeah. about them. And sometimes, you know, it's just they've literally told their partner and that's it. They've carried it. And I've also had people who've just had loss. It does not necessarily miscarriage. They've experienced loss of people during COVID. And something about my trees, before I even shared my story with them, kind of spoke to them and they just really enjoyed them. And so being able to have them on their walls, the pop of colour, because I use the pinkest pink underneath them, which is just wonderful. It's a culture hustle, Stuart Semple pink, and it just pops, and in different lights it's different colors, and it kind of, what I'm trying to do with that color is bring it back to that day when I saw the color so intently under yeah. the tree, the searing color. I'm trying to put that into it. So I'm selling the prints short term. In the medium term, I would like to create an installation which really allows people to experience inside these the nature using my paintings. So I want to have a room that has grass grown on the floor, my paintings all over the walls, and they range in size from 5 centimeters square all the way up to, my biggest canvases I can fit in my studio at the moment are 1.5 by 1.5 meters. But I really want to do murals on the walls as well. I mean, I want them to be huge scale. And then I want to create a video installation on the ceiling of the sky, but looking through the leaves as they sort of bustle and rustle in the wind. And then have a 3D landscape all around the room, a sound landscape, so that you can really hear the birds and the woodpeckers and the leaves and the trees all around you. And I've even found someone who can create the smell of a forest.
It's interesting that, though, because that's all a kind of artificial creation of the nature. And I wonder if that's the same thing as being in nature.
It won't be because you won't have all the such complicated fungi and,
yeah.
and hormones being released and all of that, but it's just an opportunity to remind people that nature is there, and even though we've been locked down and locked in for so long, we can take a pause wherever we are, whether we're outside or inside. And we can reflect, and we can use all of our senses to do that. Mm. We don't just have to look at a picture. We can just experience it by, well, I want to invite people to lie down on the grass in the room and just experience, okay. Take a breath.
Just stop a minute, because I just here, I offer, you know, I walk the dog slowly now, elderly dog, less walking. Yeah. But often yeah. I think we walk places to get from A to B. We walk for ourselves. Sometimes we walk with a friend and chat, or we walk and we listen to a podcast and yeah. we still don't stop.
Yeah.
And what I've been trying to do recently is not just walk the dog, walk the same route, walk and stop, walk and sit on a bench, walk and sit leaning with your back against a tree. When the grass isn't wet, lie down on the floor and listen. And I don't do it all the time, but if you are walking and listening to this as you're out, try that. Put us on pause. Wait to the end. We've only got another 10 minutes or so to go. Wait to the end. But when you finish listening, or now, look out for a nice spot to sit and do it, because it doesn't take this long. And I think particularly when you combine it with a sense of, you know, with some of that breathing, perhaps just deep breathing, just 3 deep breaths can really reset you. And I'm constantly surprised. I'm really interested in this at the moment, but constantly surprised how doing some of these, you realize how tense perhaps you get about things.
Yeah.
You think, I didn't even realize I was in this state until I stopped and yeah. took myself out of it. And it can reset you quite powerfully for the rest of the day. It's quite yeah. extraordinary.
Totally agree. And what I was saying about just looking down, you know, when I was in that point of having to look down, I realized how much I was looking down. Mm. But I didn't just realize how much I was looking down. I looked around me and everyone just looks down. Mm. Their natural position is shoulders up, which means you can't breathe. You're not using half your lungs anyway, and looking down. So that's why my project is called Look Up Trees. It's about looking up. Mm. And all the stuff I've been posting on social media is all about, there's kind of like several layers of the title, but it's all about, like, the sky is always there and it's always blue. It might have some shade for a bit. There might be things that get in the way. But if you're constantly trying to look up, then you'll see it. You will, and you'll see different things. And the amount of life that happens above your head in a woodland is just phenomenal. Mm. And I've experienced 37 years of my life without realizing quite the colors that you can see, and the layering of the leaves when the sun's beating down and it shines through different layers of leaves, the number of different shades of green that you can see is phenomenal. And it's just beautiful, really beautiful.
What's your Instagram handle if people want to come and find you on Instagram?
It's Ems Finch Art. That's E-M-Z Finch, F for Freddie, I-N-C-H Art. Ems Finch Art, all one word.
And your website is the same. It's emsfinchart.co.uk.
Yes. And the longer term, just briefly, I would like to learn the forest bathing technique myself. And I would really love to partner it with the way that I use mindful sketching a lot. So drawing breath, every time I go out for a walk in the woods, I take a sketchbook and a pencil. And if just being there and taking the breath is not doing it for me, I will get out my sketchbook and I'll have just, because I know that I'm a visual person now, and just keeping my mind busy and related to my breath the whole time, it also massively works for me. So I want to learn about forest bathing, take people who may have experienced PTSD into nature and help them, and maybe work with corporates to understand how we need to create space for nature. You know, everyone going back into their offices will be brilliant, will be a good thing for them perhaps, but like companies offer rooms for spirituality and religion, I think it would be a really amazing place to start from if we encourage them to create roof terraces with greenery, with rooms maybe with some of my paintings and trees, and places that you can go and reset when you are deep in a stressful situation. I think I'd love to work with them and schools, and there's so many things, so many ways.
So many things.
Yeah. It's like a tree, lots of branches.
So I think one of the things as well is that you're looking for is a bit of a kind of corporate or a charity partner to kind of help take this to another level. Now, I know that you've done a lot of kind of reaching out and getting in touch with people, hence a lot of the link ups that you've already got with charities, but also, you know, putting this out there now, if anybody's listening and they're thinking, actually I could do this, or I'm sure there's some, you don't have to have it fully resolved, you don't have to know what the solution to this is, but if you've listened to this and you know maybe you've paused what you're doing and you're stopping and you're listening and you're thinking, yeah, that sounds fantastic, there's maybe a way that my company, or I'd like to introduce, you know, my company and my someone in my company as a way that can help get this off the ground, get in touch with Ems, please, because that's how these ideas start to grow. They're not fully formed at the beginning. They start just by having this conversation. So that would be incredible if that could come out of this.
Thank you, Alice. Yeah, that's absolutely right. I've been having so many amazing conversations. The universe is working to put me in touch with the most incredible people. Yeah. And I believe wholeheartedly that I've just totally accepted that this project will happen. Yeah. And I don't want to put false sort of parameters on it until I've had some of those conversations. So yeah, I'm open to pretty much anything and everything.
And how are you now?
I'm doing really well. I've got my last CBT session scheduled for a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah.
My therapist often jokes that I've kind of created my own therapy. So she feels it is without doing any specific art therapy, and that's a whole big ball game that I haven't even looked into. I think I'm quite self-aware, so I've created something which I know will work for me, and I'm actually putting yoga and tapping into my process. I haven't even touched on how I use my process, but I think we're running out of time, aren't we?
I mean, I just think it's a really interesting conversation about, you know, we all, you know, we talk about art, the way we do things. I think lots of us, if we're honest, you know, we do art because we know the therapeutic value it brings to life and how thankful we are to have this in our life. And there are lots of people who don't have that creative outlet, but as you say, this connection between art and nature, it's a long found one. It's just a fantastic project, and I'm just thrilled to see where it's going to go. And you know, it's just grown from, it wasn't really just a tiny seed, was it? But it was just this flash of an idea.
Yeah, it really
response was. That has really grown. It's been wonderful, wonderful to see. So all best wishes for that. So there we go. Last shout out then for go and have a look at emsfinchart.co.uk. You can get in touch with Emily. You have our contact form on your website?
Yes, I do. Several places on the website.
Okay.
Yeah. So
or via Instagram. So go over and have a look. And if you know anybody who would love to get one of these prints as a gift or as a present, you can buy prints directly from her. Right. So to finish up then, have you got something that's inspired you then? Is it Beyond Trees, your inspiration?
No, it's not. But
more trees.
In my defense, more trees. I'm the tree lady.
It's
now,
really funny though, because we were talking, trees came up last week when I was talking with Louise. She says a lot of people on her courses, they say, you know, what inspires you? Trees. But it's different things for so many different people. I mean, you know, they are a life force, aren't they? Yeah. Okay, so tell us,
they are
trees in this format, what are they?
Well, so there is in London at the moment, in the courtyard of Somerset House, a Forest for Change, which is basically all the pledges from the UN for climate change. And they've planted 400 trees in the courtyard, species that are kind of more common in the UK. And it's an amazing experience. Brian Eno has done the soundtrack, which uses birds from the UK, and his incredible ability to make sort of emotion from sound. It's amazing. And there's the pillars, so all the pledges have pillars in the centre of it. There's a big circle that you can go into. It's just amazing. The framing of it with the building, Somerset House building. So you'll stand in the middle of the forest and all you can see is trees. And then at the top of the trees, you see the building, the tops of the buildings. And it's just an amazing space.
I'm trying to imagine Somerset House. I don't know what the dimensions are. So this is a central courtyard space within a building that is, how old is the building? Early Georgian?
Yeah.
I don't know. But, you know, just imagine grey stone, those kind of, I don't even know what they're called, but arches, windows. But that sort of large grey London buildings. I'm trying to describe it for not very well for people who haven't seen it. But the courtyard space is quite big. It's quite a big courtyard, and they do concerts in there and ice rinks and things usually.
Yes.
How big is the courtyard? 200, maybe not 200 metres. 100 metres?
Something along
20 metres. Well, pretty big. It's pretty big.
It's pretty big.
Does 400 trees make it feel, is it full of trees? Does it feel quite compact?
No, there's plenty of room on the outside. In fact, when I walked in, I thought, oh, that's not many trees. It doesn't look like 400 trees when you walk
right,
in.
Okay.
There's plenty of room around it to walk all the way around it. But it's been very cleverly designed by Es Devlin, but to to have like little walkways through it.
Yeah.
And it's all bark. And it does really feel like you're sort of wandering through a little bit of the forest. It's just, it needs to be experienced, basically,
okay.
is what I'd say. And it's not just that. I went thinking it was just going to be 400 trees, but there's the whole London Design Biennale is happening in Somerset House. So there are installations in every single room from every country that's part of this initiative. So every country, like this amazing one of Taiwan, Ecuadorian one was amazing. They're all just all about climate change and nature. And so I was in second heaven, just loads of installations. It's brilliant.
That sounds fantastic. I'm quite excited to go and see that. I'm going to go off and investigate that and put that on my list of things to go and see alongside.
It's only open for another 10 days, I think. So
right, I better get on it quick then.
Yeah.
Okay, so if this is going out, you might only have 5 days left.
Yeah.
All right, that is fantastic. I hope that, I'll leave that with you, that conversation, everybody. I think it's worthwhile one to be having for all sorts of reasons, really. But, you know, most importantly, whenever, if you get a kind of little flash of idea, what I really love is don't let your ideas keep you small. Look where they can go if you give them that breathing room and the encouragement to grow. Really, really excited. Thank you very much for your time and for being here and sharing your story with us.
Thank you. And thanks for all your continued support. I've been a member of your amazing Connected Artist group for a long while now. And it's given me huge benefits and been one of the big factors in me having the confidence to, you know, start the landscapes in the first place. And then, yeah, have the confidence to take something small and make it really rather big. So thank you very much.
Well, it's tremendous, and it's all down to you doing it too. So okay, have a wonderful week, everybody. That's it from us. Until next time, see you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Was like this at the beginning. What happens now? Nothing. I just have to start it. I just have to take a deep breath away still before I begin.
Like, there's something I didn't know.
No. It's, don't worry. I'm not waiting for you to start it.